It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Top 10 takeaways.
And how cool is this? We are broadcasting live from Detroit. We've been covering the NFL draft now for, it seems like, for like a whole week. But we are going again at 12 noon, covering every pick on day three. But we had to get our man, Andrew Cooper. Coop is in the house from Fantasy Alarm. I talked to Coop. I'm like, Coop, let's do something on draft weekend, because this is one of our favorite guests to have in the Roto Underworld. Coop is going to bring the heat, and we're going to give you our top 10 takeaways from the NFL draft. I know Matt and I are talking this morning. What an incredible day for fantasy football. Incredible 2 days for fantasy football. We had day one with all the offensive selections. We tied a record for the most wide receivers selected. We tied a record for the most quarterbacks selected. And then yesterday we start out with Keon Coleman, Ladd McConkey. Incredible. Coop, what's like your bird's eye takeaway? This is not technically a top 10 takeaway, but your bird's eye takeaway from this NFL draft.
Yeah, I mean, first I want to say I'm in the house, but I'm not in the literal fantasy mansion that you guys have in Detroit there. And Anand Nanduri was supposed to sneak me in his suitcase, dude, but never swung through Boston on the way. So didn't actually make it out. But yeah, I got to say, as a tight end enthusiast, from my bird's eye view, I see one, maybe two tight ends we can draft in a rookie draft. And then everybody else right now is looking pretty grim. Once the first big dog blocking tight end comes off the board before the guys you were hoping go, it gets pretty ugly. So we'll talk about that.
Well, keep a little tight end gas in the tank, because we're going to end the show with Coop's best available tight ends. Coop is sort of the Matt Harmon of tight ends, or is Matt Harmon the Coop of wide receivers? I'm not sure how it's going these days, but Coop's going to drop his tight ends to watch. But Podfather, bird's eye view, this was a unbelievable 2 day period for you.
Okay. We're going to start off bird's eye view for each of us. Then we each have three top 10 takeaways. This is technically going to add up to 12 takeaways. So we're getting two bonus takeaways. If you're doing the math at home, we're actually going to give you more than 10 takeaways here. Bird's eye view, 14 straight offensive players. The NFL went from incremental improvement, getting more efficient with draft picks. There's been a leap forward in the efficiency of draft pick selections of the NFL. Just look at the emphasis on offense, realizing that's where you get the most bang for your buck when you're investing capital, is on the offensive side of the football. No off-ball linebackers, no running backs in the first round. So this is just a revolution from not too long ago, Saquon Barkley, number two overall.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It was a tough watch for like our IDP listeners, but for most fantasy football enthusiasts, there was nothing better than what we saw on Thursday evening. And I'll say that my big picture takeaway is to go looking at like the NFL contract perspective. There is no more powerful thing than having a quarterback on a rookie contract. And you saw just how highly valued the quarterback position was. We all predicted somewhere between four and five quarterbacks going in round one. Six went. We tied a record, and then we tied a record for wide receivers. And then we had two wide receivers selected within the first four picks of round two. There is nothing more powerful than having a quarterback or a wide receiver on a rookie contract these days, based on just the way the NFL is valuing those two positions.
Yeah, I think that it was fun to make fun of Atlanta for drafting Michael Penix, but at the end of the day, we all know that the quarterback is the most important position. And if you're going to sink capital into a particular position, even if you have a franchise quarterback already, and I don't think Kirk Cousins qualifies as a full-fledged franchise quarterback, but they're paying a guy a lot of money to play quarterback. It's not necessarily crazy to double down on that position as long as that position is the most valuable on the football team.
Not to mention, they do retain some trade value, as we've seen, right? Like, even if he doesn't play, I watched Josh Rosen get traded for a second, right? I watched Sam Darnold get traded for a second and change. I mean, the Falcons once upon a time drafted Brett Favre in the second, and they traded him for a first. Jimmy G got a second back. So, you know, unlike some other positions where if you draft a guy and he completely nosedives, you've got nothing. I mean, if they just have him as the backup for a couple of years, they could potentially still just turn around and get something back for him. So I don't think it – I mean, I didn't love it, but there's an argument to be made that over the long haul, it's going to be just fine.
Yeah, Falcons were a laughing stock for that pick, but actually it's the Carolina Panthers, I think, are without a doubt the worst front office in football. That's a bonus takeaway. That's actually not my I'll just go first.
My 13. We're up to 13 now, folks.
Is Michael Penix is going to be the best value in Superflex in two QB leagues. That's for go back through the annals of time. You have a Peyton Manning fusion neck surgery. You've had multiple lost seasons for Matthew Stafford. Brady lost a season to a torn ACL. Lamar Jackson's had a bunch of seasons cut short by injury. We've already had Anthony Richardson missed a lot of time with injury. We had a lot of Gardner Minshew. You go down through, we had Taylor Heineke, Jacoby Brissett. You see all of these high-end backup quarterbacks playing a half a season or more every year. It's a brutal sport. The quarterback positions go down. Deshaun Watson tore his ACL. Think about all the problems that we had and all the injuries that have happened to Drew Brees' shoulder. And we could just go on and on and on and on and on. And now we actually have a guy that's currently not even healthy at this moment coming back from, you know, an Achilles injury with Kirk Cousins. So there was a probability that Kirk Cousins missed time this year anyway, but it's even higher now that he's, recovering from a major soft tissue injury in the lower body. So we are going to see some panics. He is going to be rushing. And the fact that you can get him at the end of the first round, beginning of the second round in Superflex and two QB leagues, you're talking about swinging for the fences. Like, oh yeah, Xavier Worthy, you got to swing for the fences. You got to go upside. Actually, that would be panics.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting take. And after years of quarterback stability with Matt Ryan, they make a Super Bowl with Matt Ryan. They have continual winning seasons with Matt Ryan. They've had some of the worst quarterback play imaginable. They go and they upgrade the offensive coordinator, and then they say to themselves, Kirk Cousins at the time was the best of a scarce free agent class. They sign him for a mega deal. But throughout the evaluation process, Michael Penix must have really, really impressed them to the point that they're passing up on players like Roma Dunze, like countless offensive linemen, countless defensive linemen, edge rusher. And they're drafting Michael Penix. So we don't know what happened in the process, but at the end of the day, it just shows, you know, how highly they are valuing the quarterback position. It's sort of a never again mentality. We're never going to go into it with quarterbacks that we're not enthusiastic about putting out there.
What do you think about Penix, Coop?
I mean, I think he's a great player. I was hoping he would go somewhere else, but at the end of the day, the draft capital speaks to how they value the guy. They probably thought someone else would take him. Now, what I want to talk about here is the second half of what your take here, which is the Carolina Panthers. And my goodness, when you look at this, like, do they even have a computer in the building? You have to ask. Like, do they have Microsoft Excel? Because everyone in, like, if they just dabbled a toe into the analytics sector here, they would know that every single person, every Dwayne McFarland, every
little pinky,
and just a dab, like, if you just touch the tip of the wide receiver analytics, you would find that. That the number one worst guy you can take is the super late breakout guy. In fact, the numbers show it's actually negatively correlated. You're almost better taking somebody that did nothing than taking somebody that only broke out in their fifth year and their next best year was 197 yards. Then they circle back around just on top of that, you know, not knowing if Brayshaw was going to be the guy or not, and take the two shortest shelf life positions you can take in a running back and a linebacker. Just to be sure, like the luxury pieces that you take when you're ready to win now, they come back and do that. So I don't know. Maybe they do think Bryce Young immediately this year is going to be the dog and you can go and do that. But I look at this draft and I just can't believe it that they ushered out the old the old regime, and it's almost like they found some notes in the desk from the old regime and said, "Oh, we'll just do this." What those guys might have done.
Carolina cannot resist the big outside receiver from the SEC, Terrace Marshall, Jonathan Mingo, and now Xavier Leggett. It's, you know, they cannot help themselves down there with that archetype. And how different would our kind of outlook for them be today if they would have simply traded up to grab Ladd McConkey or even a Keon Coleman? I think you could paint yourself a picture for both of those guys. And what happened? The two smarter franchises cleaned those two guys up a couple picks behind them. So now it's Xavier Leggett versus Ladd McConkey and Keon Coleman for the rest of time when you're evaluating that pick.
Yeah, it's brutal, man. And, you know, that's the thing is when your fan base understands new regime, you have the green light to do the smart things and do the boring things. And I actually liked what they did the offseason, paying the guards, Robert Hunt to Damian Lewis. You had the green light to take a Ladd McConkey, the kind of safer player. You had the green light to go offensive line, basically do anything besides what you did. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see. Maybe they have it right, and this guy breaks the mold. But from everything we've seen, the guy that just stays in school until he's older than everybody else, and then he dunks on everybody because he's bigger and stronger, it doesn't really work out that well.
I mean, there's so few teams that are doing what Carolina is such a throwback team in that they're trading up constantly when they don't need to. Like, that's very, you know, 2005 NFL draft. They're the first team, you know, to just go out and grab a running back, right? If you're first through the door to get your running back, then you're at the back of the line when it comes to, you know, stack ranking these teams for who makes the best decisions on draft day. And it's funny because, you know, Tepper was, you know, a forward-thinking hedge fund manager. I thought he would come in with a bunch of analytics and they would be, you know, tip of the spear quickly in the NFL. And it's the opposite has happened. Like, this is now officially the donkey franchise in the NFL.
What they did at running back is like in a single QB league, when you take the first quarterback and then you're looking around and talking to your league mates and you're like, QB runs probably should start now, right? Like, everyone else should, you start getting nervous that you're the only person that took one. And that's what happened. They took a running back. Nobody took one for another 40 picks. Like,
and it's sort of like digging their heels in. Last year, they overpaid wildly to go get Bryce Young. And then this year, those two picks were like, let's push the chips in even more. Let's give Bryce Young a couple of these weapons, where it's sort of like, that's the kind of move you make if you're Houston and you have a guy that you know is going to come through. I think it's like you guys both said, it's very short-term, aggressive thinking. And that sort of moves in the NFL, they rarely play out the way you'd like.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
What is your big takeaway from the draft?
Well, I have a few, but I think that a lot of times when the Senior Bowl comes, you see like the smart fantasy analysts kind of drop everything. And I know at Fantasy Alarm, I know at Player Profiler, we will do multiple shows, multiple articles, multiple, you name it, when it comes to Senior Bowl coverage. We are sending people down to the Senior Bowl every year. Matt Kelly was down there 2 years ago. This year, Jason Allwine was down there. We're working with Roster Watch to make sure that Cody and Alex and Jason were streaming every single night. Matty Kiwum watched every single minute of Senior Bowl coverage. And it's because of this. The NFL values the Senior Bowl, when they say that the draft starts in Mobile, it absolutely does. And when you look back at the Senior Bowl this year, we talked about Xavier Leggett and Ricky Pearsall both sneak into the end of the first round. They were both at the Senior Bowl. Few picks later, Ladd McConkey, Senior Bowl. When you look at the quarterback position, Michael Penix, Senior Bowl. Bo Nix, Senior Bowl. When you look at the top cornerback, arguably, in this entire draft, Quinyon Mitchell, Senior Bowl. And when you look at Talisi Fuaga, Senior Bowl. The Senior Bowl matters. I think every year the Senior Bowl is going to be more amplified to the point where it's almost going to become within 5 years, I think it's going to be almost like a mini NFL combine where everything's going to stop. And I feel like the quote-unquote non-fantasy sites are going to embrace the Senior Bowl sort of like we do in the fantasy football world.
Yeah, it's almost a bit of a renaissance. And I think a big part of it is what happened during COVID, where you couldn't get access to these guys and you couldn't talk to these guys. And what happens? Well, Trevor Lawrence goes at one, you know, via Zoom interview, and he's good. And then four quarterbacks go in the first round that absolutely nosedive because there was no process at the time, right? There was no meeting with these guys. It was all online. And I think teams are getting back to where they used to be, which is that they realize everybody has access to film these days and everybody can watch them and check the spreadsheets unless you're the Panthers and you don't care about them at all. And the important thing is getting to know these guys and meeting with these guys and talking to these guys. So, yeah, I think absolutely it would be a disservice for teams to ignore all these things. And I think the only team that really does ignore most of it is the Rams, right? Like, they don't even go to the combine. But, you know, then they seem to be doing okay, but they have their own process for that. I think the rest of these teams are realizing, like, hey, we need to go around. And you saw it this year. Huge, like the Patriots were sending a caravan. Ben McAdoo and the whole gang was going to every single pro day they could get to, you know, to make these decisions. So, you know, I love it. And I love that you guys especially kind of were on the forefront of that. You know, you hear it, the clips of the players. I always love that, the clips of the players popping in and being like, you know, I'm so-and-so and you're listening to the Roto Underworld. Like, you guys were always ahead of that. So hats off to you guys on that.
The running back position is also not only wide receiver, certainly Jaden Reed, when I was at the Senior Bowl, was clearly, you know, an elite. Jaden Reed and Tank Dell.
Puka Nacua.
And Puka Nacua was there. Puka Nacua only was there for one practice. So we didn't get as good of a look at Puka, but Dell and Reed were the best receivers on the field at that Senior Bowl and who had outstanding rookie years at the wide receiver position. Those two guys, both not drafted in the first round. Maybe in future years, guys that are performing that well at the Senior Bowl will start to go in the first round. It wouldn't surprise me at all. And every year I'm there, I notice a running back that stands out and it's like, oh, who is Tajay Spears? This guy is electric. Who is, remember Antonio Gibson. Antonio Gibson was at my first Senior Bowl. It's like, who the hell is this guy? This guy's a unit and he's fast. What the hell? Where'd he come from? Memphis? Oh my God, let's do some more research. Then all of a sudden, bam, he goes third round. He has two 10 touchdown seasons. I think that the running backs in this class are underrated. I've already seen some early rookie drafts that are happening quickly. And we're now into the late first round of some of these rookie drafts. And I'm noticing the McConkeys, the Worthies, the Keon Colemans. Those are the guys that are getting drafted at the end of the first round in Superflex and 2QB leagues. And I'm thinking, well, this is an amazing opportunity. It's like the fact that you could actually draft, this is real, guys. These are real drafts that are happening. You could draft Jonathan Brooks and Trey Benson back to back.
Yeah. And I think we're going to have both of those players as top 20 running backs in our dynasty rankings. And rarely, guys, just kind of philosophically looking at it like a big picture in dynasty, this is going to be the latest that we've seen an RB1 and an RB2 in the class, whichever way you rank Brooks and Benson. And I think the three of us could do an hour-long pod on sort of that discussion. However you rank those guys, this is going to be the latest we've ever seen an RB1 and an RB2 go in a rookie draft. I can't recall another year where RB1 and RB2 are pushed down this much. So, you know, this is going to be a real, like, when the rubber meets the road. Was this running back class bad, or did the hive mind sort of push that down to the point where we're undervaluing Brooks and Benson?
Well, now it's official. The NFL has discounted running back, but running backs are not discounted in fantasy football. So Jonathan Brooks would have been a first round pick
yes,
not long ago. It's right. Even possible that Trey Benson would have been a first round pick not long ago. So I am going to be hoovering these guys up along with Michael Penix right at the 110, 11, 12, 13, 14, fit right in that area of super flex, 2QB drafts, rookie drafts. I'm super excited about it. Unfortunately, it's going to mean that I have less McConkey. I have less Coleman. I like those guys. They're great. They receive, but outside the big three, you know, I'm gonna be trying to zig while everyone else is so fixated on these wide receivers. What about you, Coop?
Yeah, especially where you're picking, right? Because you know you've said this for a long time that running back is the currency in fantasy football, right? Like that's what makes the trades. That's what makes it happen. And going through the past few years, like you know, Christian McCaffrey still scored almost 400 fantasy points, right? Like you won with Todd Gurley, you won when Alvin Kamara scored 6 touchdowns. Like that still is what makes it happen in these leagues. And the people picking at 10, 11, and 12 are the good teams in your dynasty league. So the way it's shaking out is you're letting the good teams get the guys that are going to make impacts right away. And I think Jonathan Brooks is going to. He says he's ready for training camp. And you have to remember, James Conner, he's going to turn 29 in, I think, like 6 days, 5, 6 days. May 5th, I think, is his birthday. And he's literally never one time played the entire season. Not one single time has he made it through an entire season, which I don't mind having those players on my team in Dynasty because my teams are awesome. And so I just put the good players in. Keenan Allen and James Conner, they play. And when they get hurt, then I go to my bench and I put another awesome player in. So I don't mind having injury-prone guys at all in Dynasty. But just know that Trey Benson is going to play in general. And at some point, when James Conner gets hurt, he's going to be the feature back for Kyler Murray.
On one of the NFL's best offenses suddenly. Right. And it's a rich-get-richer scenario where – typically, if you're drafting at 110, 111, 112 in Superflex, you have two great quarterbacks. It's easy to grab Penix. That's the clear move. Yeah. Of course, I'm going to grab Penix with all those teams. And of course, I'm going to retool, restock always my running backs because those teams probably have a nice wide receiver core already. And what are you really gaining? It's, just project it out in your mind, right? Simulate the season. What does Keon Coleman have to do to supplant even like a Jaden Reed, that level receiver, and those guys are already widely available. It's not that difficult to go and acquire a Michael Pittman, right? And so what kind of currency, best case scenario, are you really getting from a Coleman or a McConkey? Sure. Yeah. Or I like Jalen Polk, right? I like Jalen Polk a lot. I think it's a great scenario for him, but what is he really going to get you right in trade if things even break right for him versus things break right for Trey Benson. Yes. Things break right for Jonathan Brooks. It's a completely different tier of trade value. So do you have another a takeaway for us, Coop?
Yeah, I want to hit you with a takeaway. I do want to say to your Michael Penix point, in my hometown league, 1QB league 1 year, I took Tua, and then a couple picks later, I traded back up and I took Jalen Hurts. And there were 10 teams in my league that were laughing at me and thought that was dumb. And there was one team in my league that was really nervous, and his quarterback was Carson Wentz. But you have to remember, people hated that Jalen Hurts pick. They hated my pick of him in Dynasty. The Eagles fans didn't like it because they had MVP Carson Wentz, and look at it now. So things can change pretty quick in this league. I think if we're talking about big takeaways from this draft, though, we have to talk about Blake Corum and Kyren Williams, right? Like that, I think that has to be at the forefront here. And let me tell you, with Kyren Williams, and we talked about
this. This is a proud moment for the Podfather that you're doing this one, Coop.
Yeah, because we talked about this last time we were on, and we were looking around, and we were like, okay, who makes us nervous? And the chat did not like when the Podfather brought up Kyren Williams, right? And of course they don't. The Buzzards have to get theirs at the time. But look at you now. When we talked about how Kyren Williams, the weakness to his game, which was supposed to be a strength coming out of college, was that in his rookie year, there were 148 running backs that had enough pass blocking snaps to be graded, and he graded as number 140. For those keeping track at home, there are 32 NFL teams. So if you're the 140th best at something, then you're in big trouble. And then last year he comes out and he allows 7 pressures, which is tied for the third most among any running back. It just so happens that Mr. Blake Corum, coming out of Michigan, did not allow a sack over his last 2 seasons. So I think what ended up happening here is the Rams looked around and they said, hey, you know what? We like Kyren Williams. Why don't we see who is similar to Kyren Williams, but maybe does something a little better, right? That we can complement him with. And pass downs are not the downs we want our guy coming off the field, because that's why Philip Lindsay had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons and he got smoked because he couldn't pass block. Damian Pierce ranked outside the top 130, graded outside the top 130 in pass blocking, right? Tyler Allgeier, Michael Carter. How many times have we seen teams have a guy that is a day three or undrafted guy and have him look good, and then the team says, hey, that was pretty fun. What if we got an even better running back? What if we got an even better running back? How good would it be then? And then you get Bijan Robinson and Breece Hall and I guess Devin Singletary and all these guys coming in. Now it's pretty scary for Kyren Williams. And anyone that was drafting in the first round at best ball has to be looking at those drafts and saying, whoops.
Matt, go ahead. It's time for you to cook.
No,
Kyren,
man,
Williams.
This was one of the easiest things to see of all time, where total fantasy points scored is not a stat that NFL front offices care about. And you can airdrop a player that has good but not great skills across the board, and they could put up 200-plus fantasy points in a season. That doesn't necessarily mean you need to draft them high the next year, especially at the running back position. It's so fungible based on opportunity. And if you know a team has no one behind a day three pick on the depth chart, you have to assume they're going to go running back day two. I assumed Dallas would go running back day two. I assumed the Chargers would go running back day two. You have to assume. Sometimes you're it's fortunate, like with Zamir White. We'll talk about him later. Wow, right? I like Zamir White, but I also know that they're going to go running back. The Raiders are looking at their depth chart going, all we have is a day three pick in Zamir White. We got to bolster this position. So I'm thinking this is a great candidate team for running back. So you're not allowed to be surprised when the Rams go out. And if they're going to grab a running back in day three, it's going to be a Brooks. It's going to be a Benson. Even if it was like a Shipley, all of these guys are problems. If it was Brandon Allen, it had been a problem. There were so many guys that would be hugely problematic for Kyren Williams because he doesn't have any particular skill that's going to chase another running back off the field.
Yeah. It's, I see a lot of the mental gymnastics right now with Kyren Williams dynasty managers. And certainly I'll give Matt props, because on the Sonic Truth, Alan and I were a little bit more optimistic about the situation than Matt. Matt was a take any first rounder for Kyren Williams in dynasty. We were saying, you know, try to get, you know, into the top whatever. But the thing, the mental gymnastics here is,
it's like the Westminster Dog Show with the hoops being jumped through out there on Twitter.
It's a lot of hoops being jumped through and a lot of mental gymnastics here, Coop. But when you talk about it, this is a coach that's continually had incredible running back production. This is a coach that rarely is looking to play two running backs. I mean, you talk about Todd Gurley, you talk about Kyren Williams, you talk about multiple running backs sort of in the Sean McVay era that have had this incredible volume and incredible fantasy production. Now you get a third-round running back. Kyren Williams was a sixth-round running back. You talk about size. Blake Corum is 15 pounds heavier, possibly more when he gets to his playing weight. You talk about college production. Blake Corum had 58 rushing touchdowns for the Michigan Wolverines. When you say, why did J.J. McCarthy not throw the ball? He is a top 10 pick and has all sorts of tools. It's because the offense was completely built around Blake Corum. Blake Corum is a high character guy, a leader of the Michigan football team. He's going to eventually be a leader of the Rams as well. This is a really, really tough scenario for Kyren Williams. And even at the end of the day, Kyren Williams didn't catch a ton of balls last year. His production was largely running based. Now, maybe they use him more as a receiver and Blake Corum becomes the goal line back. But I think that there's a scenario where Blake Corum is getting the goal line touches and the rushing attempts are somewhat split starting out. I think this is a tough one for Kyren Williams.
Yeah, when you mention running backs like a Justin Forsett a month ago, comparing him to a Kyren Williams, you're laughed at.
Yeah.
You're mocked. Like, you're like, you don't know what you're talking about. Unsubscribe. And it's like, okay, come on back. Come on back and hit that subscribe button again. Yeah. I know you want to.
They never come back, dude. I'm never getting the Giants fans back.
You got James Robinson.
I've seen some things, man. Yeah. I've seen James Robinson. Yeah. I've seen Justin Forsett. I've seen a lot of things, man. I've seen a different running back for how many years after Terrell Davis was an RB1 for the Broncos, Guys like Orlandis Gary. I've seen some things. Okay. So lesson learned for next time, everybody.
They went into the draft with three running backs on the depth chart. Three. They had three running backs yesterday before the start of the draft. What did you think was going to happen in with the Rams? You know?
Yeah. I think this is a segue into sort of one takeaway that I have is Coop brought up the Kyren Williams, Blake Corum situation. You alluded to Coop earlier about James Conner potentially losing value with the uber athletic Trey Benson being drafted that highly. But for me, my big takeaway is one really underrated asset we saw all offseason in Dynasty was this running back class that's heading into their third year in the league, the 2022 draft class. And last year, those guys, they all produced. We saw, a huge amount of these guys finish as RB2 or better, including Breece Hall, who just lit the world on fire. And certainly Breece Hall was valued where he should be in Dynasty. But you have several running back survivors so far. And I could look very foolish for this one because the fourth round, we got some dangerous guys like Jalen Wright and Braylon Allen, Will Shipley, that could certainly be really bad for this take. But right now, James Cook is a massive running back survivor. This is a player that I alluded to in my Dynasty Landmines article. I thought that the Bills could embrace a Trey Benson and really lean into the running game, give James Cook some issues. They've shown that they are at least waiting until day three. A day three bet to take away James Cook, Kit Cook's role is a way less, it has way less, value than if they would have done it earlier. I think that Rashad White survives for yet another offseason. Rashad White was a guy that it was kind of a, hey, let's sell Rashad White RB4 season. Rashad White can regress and still put up a top 15 running back season. And they draft Graham Barton in the first round, one of the best interior offensive linemen in this class. Isaiah Pacheco is another guy who obviously they could add a running back today, but the Chiefs improved their offensive line and they added Xavier Worthy, an elite downfield threat that can be moved all over the wide receiver position and adds elite speed. And then, we got to talk about Zamir White, because Zamir White was maybe the most dangerous one because the sample size is so tiny. It was a 4-game stretch. And sort of we had, our dynasty take lock on him that he's good. He's a Georgia Bulldog, one of the best high school recruits in the country, fourth round pick. We had to wait a long time, but we had four straight weeks of running back 20 or better. The Vegas Raiders completely ignored running back on day two. Now, again, if Jalen Wright's a Vegas Raider, Matt, you got to go back and edit this podcast. But if he survives round four, all four of these guys are guys that can give you a ton of running back utility in Dynasty, and they're all going to produce in redraft as well.
I like Javonte Williams also.
Oh, I should have said Javonte Williams. Yeah. Why don't you take that one?
So Javonte Williams goes to a team that doesn't have a great offensive line, doesn't have a great offense, now is going to have a rookie quarterback, but that quarterback is a checkdown quarterback.
Yes.
So I like that Bo Nix, he profiles as a guy that's going to go, right?
That's what they want.
He's Javonte Williams.
That's what they want. And the thing is, like, you look at Sean Payton, he wants that guy that will listen to him in the headphones and, read the play at the line and get the ball out of his hands quickly. And we all knew Joe Lombardi, he liked throwing to Austin Ekeler and he liked throwing to Alvin Kamara. But we forget with the Lions, he threw the ball to the running backs 150 times that one year he was calling the plays. And last year, the Broncos, when you add up everything with P. Ryan and Javonte Williams and McLaughlin, they led the league in targets for the running back. So with a healthy Javonte Williams and the full execution of the super check down Drew Brees offense with Bo Nix or Zach Wilson, it doesn't really matter. It's gonna be wheels up for him. So I like that a lot. I want to ask you guys about one particular player because I'm kind of torn on this. Because especially when I look at guys like Rashad White and James Cook, right? We do have the classic bruiser in this class. We've got the Braylon Allen, right? He's your Alfred Morris, Jeremy Hill, pick your poison, right? Jordan Howard. If he goes to a team like the Bills or the Bucks, say within the next couple rounds, how does that make you guys feel? Because I've been going back and forth on like, okay, he doesn't affect the role, but he'll steal some goal line probably, but Josh Allen steals goal line. Anyway, I mean, like, where do you guys live on that? Would you be okay with that? Or what are your thoughts?
I wouldn't like it for any of those guys. Okay. Because Braylon Allen is a huge back that can absorb volume and would be a threat around the goal line. So I wouldn't love it for any of those guys. I think like the three big sort of landmine running backs for to avoid today, I think we mentioned it. It's Jalen Wright. It's certainly Will Shipley because of his ability to sap targets away from pretty much any running back. And then it's Braylon Allen because Coop, he's different. He's built different than the rest of the running backs in this class. And he might not be appealing to every single team in this draft, but there's going to be a few that look at Braylon Allen and they say he's a perfect running back by committee guy for us.
Yeah, there's a few teams that you want these guys to go to. You want these guys to go to Dallas. You want these guys to go to Los Angeles with the Chargers. You want these guys to go to the Giants.
Yes.
Right? That's where we want. We don't care about Devin Singletary. We know that he is just a cardboard cutout, soon to be replaced guy that's going to get some touches, and he produced last year. Like Devin Singletary and Kyren Williams, not a big difference between those guys. Just happened to be the touches in the situations that lined up in a particular season, and that's it. But there's no loyalty to Gus Edwards in fantasy football, right? There's no loyalty to Rico Dowdle in fantasy football. So if we were playing Hand of God, we would absolutely protect the Zamir Whites and protect even the James Cooks and the Rashad Whites from getting any touch competition. So we could still run the table on running backs landing in the right spots. But I am with you, Coop, that there's going to be one guy that's going to face some serious touch competition. Dylan Lobby's the other guy.
Yeah,
Dylan Lobby's the other guy who could come in and just, if there happens to be a running back who's getting a lot of targets, even if he's not typically been a big target earner out of the backfield, Lobby's going to come in and get all those, right? That's the same thing with Shipley. So that's a worry. But, you know, a Lobby to Los Angeles would make a lot of sense, right? With Gus Edwards or in Vegas. That would make a lot of sense. So even if we're still, if we have to ruin a particular situation like Vegas, at least make it a Shipley, at least make it a Lobby so that we can have two fantasy relevant running backs potentially.
And I'll throw one at you, Coop. One interesting one is Matt, you referenced a number of running back landing spots. And I think if the three of us picked the best running back landing spots in the fourth round, we'd probably come up with like a similar list. But my under the radar running back landing spot today is the Minnesota Vikings, because Aaron Jones is somewhat on a 1 year stretch. He's new there. He's older. And I doubt that they're going to give Aaron Jones the bag for two straight years. So I think if Minnesota invests in the running back position, I think there's a chance that that running back is their 2025 starter. And for this year, he has the contingent upside behind an older back who's missed some time in his career and is in a new situation. Coop, is there any under-the-radar running back spot you're looking at for today?
Yeah, I'll give you one more. And I know people have mentioned it in the chat, some Zach Moss fans out there. But yeah. I will say, if a team brings some – because, again, with Chase Brown and Zach Moss, they should be just fine. But personally, to the Podfather's point, like, I'm somebody that has Devin Singletary and Zach Moss floating around on teams. But to me, they were already dead at a certain point. And I was just kind of holding on to them. It's like in the movie where, like, one of – you know, the good guy's buddy, he like gets shot, but then he like comes back and does one last thing. He's like, I'll guard the truck. You guys go, right? Like, that's what Devin Singletary and Zach Moss have done for me. And if they get vaporized here, I don't care, because at one point I looked at these guys and they're like, they're already dead. So that's why those landing spots, I'm cool with it. Like, if Zach Moss and Devin Singletary and these guys get crushed, that's fine. I don't want to see a split backfield with one of the backs that I'm depending on, which is what the Podfather is saying here, is we don't want any more of these. Like, if you like Josh Jacobs, you didn't want them to take Marshawn Moore.
No,
I didn't. I didn't like that one bit.
That's horrible. I think the sleeper selection for the Bengals is Shipley. The Bengals historically have been helmet chasers. They love the Alabama guys that you've seen, the Clemson guys. Like, the Bengals have historically been the team that's going to draft like an offensive lineman from Clemson in the second round that the scouts are out on typically because of character concerns or work ethic concerns. It's always the Bengals that'll come in and grab that guy in the second and third round because of the helmet, because it's Clemson, because it's Alabama, right? And so to me, knowing that they have Moss, Shipley makes so much sense to the Bengals. And then again, that's perfect. That's what we want. There's five or six spots where we could hand a god optimize the backfields around the league and not vaporize any more running backs and have it be where the only running back to really be hurt that anyone really cared about was Kyren Williams. It's just,
I actually think that the Bengals, in the Shipley one would be like a classic Bengals pick over the years. But I actually think they have 2 sixth rounders. They have 2 seventh rounders. I think we're going to avoid it. I think it's going to be a Zach Moss, Chase Brown, and whoever they draft in the sixth or seventh round, which is maybe a player we like, Matt, but certainly a little less of a threat than if they do it in round four.
The Bengals already took the guy Matt described. They just took Jermaine Burton, right? Like, the troublemaker.
This is what I'm talking about.
He's got Alabama on one side and Georgia on the other side of his helmet.
Six high schools in 8 years for Jermaine Burton, Coop. He gets around.
They don't draft small school guys at Cincinnati.
Six schools. He must be super smart.
I think that they are trying to save money, and they don't. They have a smaller scouting department that just doesn't bother going to small schools.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to it, but I like that Jermaine Burton pick though. T. Higgins, a year from now, Coop.
Oh, it's a fine pick.
It's a good pick there.
And I'll tell you this in fantasy, if guys are going to fall, give me the guys that have off field questions. I go through and look at a lot of the day three picks, and it's like Julian Edelman was a quarterback. Pierre Garçon went to Mount Union, which is day three. We all know that Tyreek Hill and Antonio Brown and Stephon Diggs had character concerns. Brandon Marshall had, undiagnosed bipolar. When I'm looking for guys in that range, third, fourth, fifth round, I want to be able to say to myself, okay, half the league crossed this guy off and said, do not draft, which Jermaine Burton potentially falls in that category. And that just pushes those guys down a little bit for me. And I can justify them falling. I want guys that fell because they're crazy, but they're good at football, versus guys that fell because they're probably going to be tackling people on punt coverage, right? So for me, Jermaine Burton, if he falls because he's a jerk and then he figures things out, awesome. Yeah, I'll take him.
I also believe, as my final takeaway, that landing spot matters more now than ever at wide receiver. The wide receiver position is so saturated around the league that you're not in any way guaranteed year one production, even if you have the draft capital. Of course, the top 10 guys, that's another story. But if you're outside the top 10, you need to land well at wide receiver. Just look at Adonai Mitchell, right? We had the big debate last night was Adonai Mitchell versus Jalen Polk. And I agree with Alex Dunlap that there's no comparison between the talent, but one guy has DeMario Douglas and a pocket passing rookie quarterback, which isn't as bad as it sounds, right? And the other guy is going to be a rotational option on a heavily run first team where the quarterback is going to be siphoning a lot of pass attempts out of that offense and running the ball. So just imagine that Lamar Jackson had the same wide receiver core that Indianapolis has and Adonai Mitchell goes to Baltimore. Everyone would hate it so much. For some reason, because Indianapolis is only in year two of like an extreme rushing quarterback at the helm, the instant processing of how bad this Adonai Mitchell landing spot is, I think Alex woke up this morning and figured it out, like it processed in his sleep. And I think that's what's happening. I'm not drafting Adonai Mitchell. He's on my do not draft list.
I will say that the Josh Downs being there is also extremely problematic for Adonai. Josh Downs set the Colts record for most rookie receptions, and he's been sort of a cheap dynasty buy all offseason long. Now Adonai Mitchell not only has to compete with Michael Pittman, but he also has to compete with Josh Downs. And Josh Downs sort of already has a connection with Anthony Richardson. It's not good. It's not a good landing spot. It's hard to paint a picture. And I'll say Chris Ballard is always one of these guys who really values athleticism. And Adonai Mitchell is sort of an on-brand pick for him when he fell to the second round. Stylistically, this helps the Colts a lot. But like you said, Matt, fantasy-wise, not a great outcome.
What do you think, Coop?
I think they just got – if they were looking for a replacement for Alec Pierce that's going to do exactly what Alec Pierce has done, which is nothing, then I think they nailed it.
Coop is cooking.
It doesn't have to be a replacement. I actually think that their four wide receiver set lineup is dangerous. It's dirty. It's great. It's great for Anthony Richardson. It's great for the Colts. It's just for fantasy. You got to be a realist.
Right. Yeah. Got to be a realist.
And, yeah. Like the thing is, you go after these like on paper, Alec Pierce is 6'4". He's fast. Like he is that guy, but that's how you get guys like DJ Chark. You're like, they have to be ballers. They have to have that dog in them, you know? And I had Brandon Huffman on the show earlier this week. And as a guy who's been a scout from high school to college and so on, that's the first, he's like, before you look at size metrics, whatever, he's like, you got to find out if these guys have like that special something. And he actually brought up specifically a year ago, Josh Downs for that, and said his brother Caleb Downs might be even more of an. So keep an eye out for him coming out, defensive player. I think he transferred maybe from Alabama to Ohio State, but keep an eye out for Caleb Downs as well.
Great call. RIP Adonai. Got another take from Theo coming up, another take from Coop coming up after this.
Now, I know many of you are looking for a secret weapon for your Dynasty League, and I have it. It's called the Dynasty Dominator app. You go to the App Store, go to Google Play. It's right there. It's $5 to download, and then every year it's $5 to load the next incoming class of rookies. You can add Superflex, add tight end premium. It's incredible because it allows you to look up players. It allows you to vote on whether a player is a buy, hold, or sell, and then see the market sentiment on that player. And you can compare their lifetime value rating from Player Profiler to their Dynasty ADP at the FFPC, all in the price lookup tool. And beyond that, we have a trade analyzer. So you'll never lose another Dynasty trade again. And in our settings, you can set, this is a win now team, this is a rebuilding team. And then we let you compare players. Look at their metrics side by side. Prospect metrics, NFL metrics. It's all there. It's $5 in the App Store. There's some add-ons for Superflex and to buy the upcoming rookie class. Every year, you're going to spend $5 on this thing. And it's going to be well worth it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coop, Andrew Cooper, do you have one more take for us?
Yeah, absolutely. And this one might not be super popular, but I look at Roman Wilson, right? And this is a guy who did not produce at a high level in college, but we're willing to give JJ McCarthy a pass, as we talked about earlier on the show, because they ran the ball heavy. I mean, like with JJ McCarthy, what did you want him to do? The team was undefeated. Did you want him to go more undefeated? Did you want him to walk into the coach's office and say, hey, Jim, can we pad my stats a little bit? Like that was never, ever happening, right? Can you imagine he tried to do something like that? So Roman Wilson coming out of that school, going to the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have been, through my lifetime, the best at scouting wide receivers. Like now the Packers may be catching up slightly with the recent incredible job they've done. But going back, this team had to jettison guys like Emmanuel Sanders and Mike Wallace, because they had too many good wide receivers with Antonio Brown and all these guys. So if this team can look at this player and ignore the production and say this guy fits our mold, the mold that creates all the mold that allows them to trade Deontay Johnson away, oh, we don't need him, 9 targets a game, then I'm in on that type of player. And I'll tell you, this has already happened once and it already worked, where Nico Collins, coming out of this same school, didn't have great production because they pound the rock and he fell to the third round and went to a team that didn't have a quarterback. And once they got a quarterback, turns out that Nico Collins is pretty damn good. And he was probably pretty good the entire time. So a guy like Roman Wilson, if a team's willing to take a stab in the third, I'm willing to take a stab. And hopefully he kind of falls under the radar. I don't think as many people are really talking about him because definitely not a super sexy pick, right?
And Matt talked about Jaden Reed and Tank Dell as guys who were great at the Senior Bowl and then produced as rookies. The most impressive wide receiver at the Senior Bowl, by all accounts, was either Ladd McConkey or Roman Wilson. And you see the parallels between the Dell situation, where Roman Wilson's going to be on the field a ton. This is a player that should be on there for two wide sets, let alone three. And Roman Wilson, we love it, Player Profiler. And when he fell out of the second round, there was a little bit of, I would say a little bit of disappointment on my half. But that totally gets alleviated when he gets the dream landing spot of Pittsburgh.
take us out, man. Give us your final takeaway, Theo.
So for me, it's the ascending offenses. I think that what we're seeing here in Chicago is unbelievable. Two seasons ago, the wide receiver room was Darnell Mooney, Dante Pettis, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Velus Jones. Now, through Ryan Poles' drafting and his maneuvering, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and now Rome Odunze, Chicago is going to be one of the league's most improved offenses with Caleb Williams in year one. And I will throw out the Arizona Cardinals. The Arizona Cardinals offense, complete talent makeover when you look at what they've done drafting Trey McBride and now Marvin Harrison Jr., Trey Benson, Michael Wilson, an underrated winner from yesterday. And they chose to go with Kyler Murray instead of leaning into this rookie class. Now they have a team that I think is going to be in the playoffs this year with one of the most exciting young offenses in football. I think Arizona and Chicago next year are the two offenses that are going to take the biggest step forward when we compare what happened in 2023 and what happened in 2024.